Geneva. Wind chill stands at 28. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. It's a special day because it is the last monthly visit of 2021 from our good friend Nan Calvert, who visits us each and every month and brings with her special guests of one kind or another to draw our attention to some kind of issue related to the environment. And today she has engineered something of a happy family reunion of sorts, a reunion of different people who in one way or another have had a connection with the organization for which Nan Calvert works, namely Root Pike Win. So first of all, Nan Calvert, we welcome you back to the program. Spell out to our listeners what you have concocted for today's program.
Well, thanks, Greg, and happy holidays, everybody. Well, I get to work with a lot of fabulous young people who do great things for our community, and they kind of fly under the radar. And I think it's important to know, for people to know in the Root Pike Watershed Basin, that there are people out there trying to change the world in big and small ways for the better for everyone, and that they have a hometown connection. So this is kind of like hometown kids make good and change the world at the same time. And so that's what this segment is about.
Very good. So you have assembled three guests to join us, two of whom are in the studio with us. And introduce them, first of all.
In our studio audience, to my right, we have Kaylin Dahm. And Kaylin is recently of Hawthorne Hollow. So she's going to be talking about how she came to this place in her life and what she does and her hopes and aspirations for the future. And to Kaylin's right is my colleague and friend, Laura Buska. She is the communications coordinator for Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network. And so within the environmental field, there are so many things that a person can do. You're not necessarily out in the field planting natives or getting rid of invasive species or, you know, doing restoration work. There are a whole multitude of venues that someone can work in and do great good for the environment.
Very good. So we'll be chatting with both Kaylin and Laura a little bit later in the program. Over the telephone is a third guest that you have invited to join us. Explain to our listeners who Kathy Hoverman is.
So this is sort of serendipitous. Kathy hails from a restoration firm called KCI, and they're really innovative and creative with their restoration projects. And if you've driven past a big sign that says Meacham Preserve, KCI is the chief firm that's been shepherding and spearheading that effort. And as we came to find out, Kathy actually was given a grant some years ago and has gone on to do great things in the environmental world. She's probably done some things in Wisconsin too, but she works elsewhere, and I'll let her talk about that. But yeah, so again, hometown kid makes good.
Very good. So Kathy Hoverman with KCI, you are with us over the telephone, and I hope you're still there.
Thank you. Hello.
Very good. Thank you for joining us. I know life's a little complicated. You're having to unexpectedly cover for somebody this morning, so we appreciate you still making time for this. So first of all, tell us a little bit about this connection that Nan was just talking about in terms of this scholarship you received once upon a time via Root Pike Win. What are your recollections of that?
Well, I was in grad school at the time. I attended University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee for my undergraduate and graduate degree. And so I was studying a river restoration. I think it was the North Pike, actually. And I, of course, was a poor college student and needed some funding to help me survive, pay for school, pay for everything that that it all involves. And so I was made aware of the funding available through Root Pike Win, and I applied for that and was granted some of that funding to help me get through grad school.
Very good. So tell us a little bit about this firm with which you are now presently associated, namely KCI. We had somebody else from KCI on the program a few months back, but particularly for the sake of any listeners who didn't hear that conversation, explain the kind of restoration work that KCI does.
Sure thing. So KCI is a full-service civil engineering firm, and then there's a good group of us that get to do the awesome work of wetland and stream restoration. We also take out dams and do fish passage and constructed wetlands, stormwater management, so many things kind of surrounding that water world of our environment, and I'm one of the lucky ones who get to do that.
Your position is senior project manager. What does that entail?
I manage people, I manage money, I get to give big picture guidance on restoration projects, and work directly with clients to help them visualize and fulfill their goals and expectations.
So explain what is going on in a typical restoration project, such as, for instance, the restoration project on Meacham Road, which KCI is very directly involved in. With a project like that, in a sense, what is being restored and how?
Right. So that one is a wetland restoration. And I actually didn't have direct involvement with that. But you know, that's regrading surfaces to create more of an interaction between the groundwater system. And I believe some beaver dam analogs were placed onto that site as well. So just trying to bring back a more natural hydrologic condition to that location. And that, you know, that can be anywhere from grading and removing some soil from the upper layers that was potentially filled in past areas to get back to that hydric soil condition. When I do river restoration, which is more of what I do, then we're looking at perhaps a ditched condition that many of our rivers have been put into, and trying to recreate a natural landform, so how it meanders, try to recreate that. It's often challenging because we put things like our sanitary sewers within stream valleys, and so meandering a stream in the same valley in which a sanitary sewer line is can be challenging and can limit how much we can meander things. We often also put our homes in our flood in the floodplains, and we put businesses in the floodplains, and we directly drop our stormwater right into our stream system. So there's a lot of things we have to deal with. We have to figure out what our constraints are and how we can best restore that. And, you know, often full restoration just isn't doable because of all the infrastructure that we have as humans within our riverine system. So we're trying to create some sort of quasi-restoration or near to restoration as we can get.
When there are decisions to be made about, for instance, what you were just saying, figuring out the best way to do something within whatever constraints might be in place, ultimately, is that completely up to you? Or are some of those choices and decisions, do they have to be made collaboratively with other interested parties?
Yeah, so most often I'm doing a project for a client who has come to us and said, we need your help, or we're hiring you to do this work. And so our job is to present options and alternatives and ways to deal with these constraints. And then we work with our clients to determine the best direction to take. And sometimes that's going to depend on if there's private property impacted or avoiding that private property. Sometimes it would be, well, we can't move this sanitary system because it's going to cost $8 million and we only have $200,000 to do this stream restoration project, things like that. It's often an easy choice, but we still present alternatives for what the actions could be.
So how many projects is KCI involved in right now in Wisconsin? I mean, and actually I should maybe preface that question by saying that I know KCI has a presence in other places because I think you do project management also out in Virginia, if I was understanding you correctly. But here closer to home, how many projects are currently underway?
I think there, besides the Meacham project, I believe there's, I know there's two currently underway. One is a large stream and wetland restoration, and I am involved with that project on the stream side, helping some of our local engineers kind of learn the ropes with that, because yes, I am stationed in Richmond, Virginia now. And then I believe there's another wetland restoration that's in progress. And we do most of these things through mitigation banking, which is a whole different kind of way in which to develop projects. And then we're constantly looking for more opportunities and to be a part of more things that are happening in Wisconsin. Our efforts in Wisconsin are fairly new, probably in the last, I think, 5 or 6 years that we've been there. So we're still small in that area.
Nan, do you have any questions for Kathy Hoverman?
I think it would be interesting for Kathy to explain what mitigation means and how it works.
Yeah, sure. So what that means is that KCI is proactively going out and finding an area that can be restored, a wetland and stream system that can be restored. And so we are investing our own financial stakes to restore, to go through the effort, to purchase the property, to work with the agencies, the different federal and state agencies in order to get things permitted. We will also do the construction work when we do this. And then in the end, what happens is that there's this lovely restored system that is then credits are derived from the amount of uplift, the ecological uplift that has occurred. And so we rate the system in its existing condition, and then we rate the system in its final proposed and constructed condition. And so that difference then, there's a whole list of calculations that goes into it. But in the end, that delta creates credits that are then sellable to businesses or entities in which they are developing in an area that impacts streams and wetlands. And so they're able to buy those credits as an offset to the impacts that they are having.
So we're talking about negative impact, and this is, in a sense, a way to compensate for a way in which maybe damage is being incurred. There's this other end of it in which restoration is occurring, and that's, I suppose, the hope is that things can have at least some semblance of a balance.
Right, right, exactly.
Very good. So how complicated do these projects get when it comes to, for instance, Mother Nature? Does Mother Nature end up sometimes having other ideas and complicating the work that you plan to do?
Yes, indeed. So often it's the restoration practitioner's like ultimate enemy to have a huge storm come through right when you've completely stripped a site bare of its trees and it's full of mud because you're recreating the channel in the floodplain and you've just put down seed and, you know, you've got rocks in the channel and things that are of a natural state, but your grass hasn't started growing yet. Your seedings haven't taken place and something comes through and just washes everything away and you've got to come in and repair it right away. So Mother Nature is a bit of trouble when that happens, and it happens fairly often. But there's also, you know, challenges in, we often are using rainfall data that is not as accurate now as it, or as reliable as it used to be. A lot of the NOAA rainfall data is kind of us underestimating rainfall events in which we use to calculate the hydrology that is impacting our system. So we're using data from the past 20 years, which isn't necessarily predictive of what rainfall in the next 20, 50, 100 years is going to look like. So that in itself can be a challenge, and there's a few methods to get around that, but it's not as easily accessible.
What about the dead of winter? Are you continuing to do this kind of work even through December, January, February? And is that
sure.
more difficult?
So in Virginia, yes, we are. In Wisconsin, it's a little more challenging. Obviously, if there's a couple feet of snow, we're not going to be able to get to the grades. We'd just be pushing around snow in order to get to the surface in which we need to excavate or manipulate to create our system. So certainly weather can put the construction season at bay, but we're designing, we're monitoring, we're doing all those things through all seasons. It's just the implementation that we'll need to take a bit of a backseat. And we also often deal with time of year restrictions in which there's spawning in the stream systems. And so construction is often forbid in those times of year in which spawning occurs.
I just wanted to point out why wetland restoration is so important, why restoring our rivers and streams is so important, because our weather patterns have changed so dramatically. So we tend to get these really heavy, flashy, fast, high-volume rains, and all of our impervious surfaces really don't help much in terms of flood control. And so when you restore wetlands and you make certain that a river, a stream, a lake, a pond is functioning as efficiently as it can mitigate a lot of flooding issues, roads washing out, that sort of thing, because those wetland ecosystems are designed to do that. That's one of their purposes in life.
Yeah, and a big difference between like a wetland versus like a stormwater management pond is that in these stormwater management ponds, they might hold more volumes of water in a smaller space, but the water also can tend to heat up. It also doesn't deal with the pollutants that are washed in with, you know, this water running over our streets and taking dissolvable metals or soluble metals and oils with it and things like that, whereas wetlands, they don't have that same heating effect on our water systems, which I guess to go the next step would impact plant life and fish and amphibians and things like that are macroinvertebrates that are within the system. So it affects the biological responses to our stream systems when we're pushing in warmed up water from stormwater management facilities.
So are you someone who still gets to get their hands dirty, or are you mostly sitting behind a desk telling other people how to get their hands dirty?
Well, I mean, today I am literally sitting in my car ready to walk out on the construction site and help a contractor implement some restoration work. It's not what I do on the everyday, but I am fortunate in that I do get to be outside and work directly with the projects on occasion and definitely get to see them go into effect. So I'm definitely not the everyday hands-on person, but enough to still keep me excited and interested and happy with the projects I get to work on.
Very good. Well, we're going to let you get to the happy business of getting your feet and hands dirty today in this important work that you help do as a senior project manager for the restoration firm KCI. Kathy Hoverman, again, a recipient of a Root Pike Win scholarship once upon a time. It was great to have you join us today on the morning show, and we wish you well with all the good work that you are continuing to do.
Yes, thank you so much. Appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Good to have you here. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. And now we're going to turn our attention to our two special guests that are in the studio with us. Kaylin Dahm, who is with Hawthorne Hollow, and Laura Busker, who actually is with Root Pike Wind. Did I pronounce it wrong?
Busker,
what did I say?
Busker.
Oh.
Like, you know, in the subways.
Oh, yeah, like a street musician. That's not you. Laura Busker. So good to have both of you here. So, Nan, reiterate Laura's connection to Root Pike Wind is current. For both of them, there's this other connection to Root Pike Wind. Is that right? Or just Kaylin?
No, both of them.
Have been... And what is it again?
Well, we snagged Kaylin as soon as we could. She started out, we met her actually through the Parkside Environmental Club. And she and the club members came out to do some invasive species removal. And it was clear that, you know, Kaylin was down with the struggle and we would like to keep her around as long as we could. So she was able to work with us for a long time. But then, of course, she had to go out and get a grown-up full-time job. So we lost her to Hawthorne Hollow, fortunately for them, but we still get to see her from time to time.
Very good. So, Kaylin, tell us about what kind of prompted your own interest in the environment and, for instance, wanting to be part of the environmental club at UW Parkside.
Well, from when I was young, I would do a lot of camping and hiking and things like that, and I actually used to want to be a meteorologist, and then I realized that that required a lot of math and that everyone would know that you're wrong all the time. So I didn't really want to do that, but as I got older, I started to be more attracted to the sciences and to earth science. In my high school, I was very, you know, close with my teacher. I would help her plan lessons for the class. So that kind of started, like, the environmental education part. And as I went to Parkside, I realized that environmental studies was a major that I could get a degree in, and I was very excited about that. So I was there for 4 years and graduated with that and with a minor in geography. So throughout that time at Parkside, I was in the environmental club the entire time, either as a member or as a vice president or president. And that's how I found Root Pike Win, which was very fun, and I had a very good experience there, and that definitely helped me get to where I am now, so at Hawthorne Hollow.
Fantastic. So what kinds of things did you do for Root Pike Win during your years of association with them?
So while I was at Root Pike Win, I was kind of a jack of all trades. I was doing a little bit of whatever they needed me for, which I loved that. I loved having something new to do every day. So I was sending out emails to promote events that we were having, or to talk about awards that people were given, or to talk about grants we were given. I did a little bit of grant writing. I got kind of like a little intro to how grant writing works, and again, that's helping me now, which is amazing. And I would do a little bit of outdoor work as well. So I would help with our invasive species removals, and I would help with our planting plans. There was a plan to put in a indoor greenhouse at the offices, which I don't think is going to happen, but it was a fun idea, and that was a lot of fun planning as well. So I was kind of doing anything they needed me for, and that's what I was doing all the time.
I suppose that really underscores the reality that environmental work often is kind of a free-flowing thing, and it involves so many different things, often things that are interconnected, sometimes in unanticipated ways. And Nan, you've probably had that experience quite a lot over the years.
Yes. I mean, you know, you have your end goal, but then there are all these steps and pathways to get to that goal. And we talk about this a lot. You know, you see big projects that nature centers are involved in, or, you know, other entities similar to Root Pike Win, and ground is broken, or there's machinery and people out there. And what's interesting is it's probably taken 3 to 5 years at least just to get to that point. There's so much groundwork to be laid beforehand. You know, as Kathy was saying, you know, there are a lot of partners at play in these kinds of things. So you just have to remember that a lot of work went into that before you get to that stage. And it takes a lot of expertise on many different levels. But
So Kaylin, tell us exactly what your position is at Hawthorne Hollow and the kind of work that you are doing at that beautiful place.
So I guess I'll just say that Hawthorne
Let's
Hollow...
Pull your mic up just a little bit if you would. That's okay.
Hawthorne Hollow is a nature sanctuary and arboretum. So we have a nature center. We have 90 acres of beautiful, like, kind of left alone land from before Kenosha was so, you know, taken over with houses and business. And there I am their naturalist and the education coordinator. So whenever we have field trips, any students that come, we have students. This last season, we had students from Brookfield down by us, so that's fairly far away, and then obviously as close as summers came. And I run our field trips. I put together our field trip programs, our educational programs, any workshops or classes that we do for adult and family or our heritage series. I'm also putting those together and running those as well. So it's a lot of... I like just telling people about the environment. That's kind of where all of this came from. So it works out very well. But again, with, like you've all said, with environmentalism, there's a lot of doing other things too. So I'm helping out with grounds work. There's some restoration work that's getting done on our land, so I'll be helping out with that next season. And, you know, picking up sticks and picking up a sign that fell over and getting a dead raccoon off of by the road. So there's a lot of different aspects to it. But again, I love that. And I still get to do the education part, which is the best.
Great. So when somebody comes to Hawthorne Hollow, for instance, on a field trip, what does a field trip at Hawthorne Hollow look like? I mean, what happens? Or where are they taken exactly?
So we have a lot of different programs. So, for example, our fall program was Cornucopia Fall. So the basis of that is when the season changes to fall, the leaves are changing, the weather's changing, and seeds become available to the environment and to people. So we talk about the importance of seeds. We take a hike through our forest and through our prairie, and we collect seeds, and they determine what kind, the means of dispersal for that seed. So there's seeds that go by wind. There's seeds that are hitchhikers. They hook onto your clothes. So all these different methods of dispersal, the students are learning the differences between them and why it's important. And then they get to see things that they use every day that come from seeds. So their food, they need to breathe air, which comes from trees. We use a apple press. A real traditional apple press, and they all get to press their own apples and learn that apples come from seed, and then you get all these different products like apple cider from that, and they all get to drink their own apple cider. So that's an example of our fall program, but a lot of them are very similar in the way that we usually take them out onto the land. We incorporate it with our property, and we teach them about some specific things. So in the spring, we have our maple sugaring program, so they learn how to tap onto maple trees and get maple syrup and how that process works. So I'm very excited for that, and that's a very busy program for us as well.
I just realized it's certainly possible that someone might be listening who doesn't really know where Hawthorne Hollow came from, and it's really quite a nice story that I'm sure you're acquainted with better than most of the rest of us. Can you give us at least the capsule summary of the history of Hawthorne Hollow?
Sure, yeah. The years will not be correct because I haven't memorized them yet, but I have the basic idea. So I'm pretty new still. there was these two sisters, Margaret and Ruth Teuscher, who they were teachers in Racine, and this was, I believe, in the 1930s, and they were looking to purchase some land off of Green Bay Road down here in Kenosha, and they had pulled off to the side, and their dog had run off onto this property, and they discovered Hawthorne Hollow, and they were like, you know, we really like this land. They ended up purchasing the land, and they used it for camping originally. They would just go there on, like, the weekends to go camp, and then they were just so in love with it that they ended up building a shack there, and then outdoor ovens and stoves, and then eventually they built their house and their horse stable, and they ended up staying there full-time. And so the Teuscher sisters started it as a wildlife refuge, and then it was kind of morphed into a nature sanctuary, and so that's where it stands today. So there's still all of the original pretty much buildings that we have there at Hawthorne Hollow that were there from the sisters. There's we have a lot of archives from when they lived there, a lot of photographs and journal entries that they have. Our office building is where those sisters lived, and it's pretty much kept to the exact way that it was when they lived there. So that's very, very, you know, cool to see every day. And then also those sisters purchased some historical buildings that were important to Summers. So there are two schoolhouses, the one-room schoolhouses from Summers,
oh, yeah,
and the Summers Town Hall, that were going to end up being used for storage on construction sites. And they ended up purchasing the buildings and placing them on that property. And so that's another fun thing that they did for that property.
Very good. My wife and I used to live right next door to Hawthorne Hollow in a house just to the south that sadly is no longer there. And it vanished with the expansion of Green Bay Road. But we spent many lovely hours at Hawthorne Hollow and returned from time to time. Are there any special events coming up that the public should know about?
Well, it's pretty late in the season. We close for the year on the 23rd, but we have observatory events every single week until we close. So we have our Wine Wednesdays, which you bring your own drinks and you sit out by the stars, and we have the observatory. So that's just basically a giant telescope that we have. You can look at the moon, the stars, any planets that are visible. So every week we have those events, as long as there's no cloud cover. But as far as for my programs for the rest of the year, we don't have any. We just finished up our wreath making workshops last week, which were amazing and so fun. So we'll be kind of calming down until March when we get to maple sugaring.
Ah, there you go. Kaylin Daum is with Hawthorne Hollow. They're naturalist and jack of all trades from the sounds of it. And someone who, in a sense, got her start in all this with Root Pike Wynn. How many years ago was that, Nan? Can you roughly estimate?
That Kaylin was with us?
Yeah.
It was just
earlier this year.
A blink of an eye, earlier this year.
Oh!
I left in April or May.
Ah.
And then I've been at Hawthorne Hollow since September, so I had the little summer doing something else, but it was very recent.
Very good. Well, it's great to make your acquaintance and to hear about the great things you're doing at Hawthorne Hollow. Also with us is Laura Buska, I will pronounce her name correctly from here on out, who is with Root Pike Wynn concurrently. Tell us how you came together with Root Pike Wynn initially.
Sure, thanks for having me. So I heard of Root Pike Wynn through a professor of Parkside, Laura Schultz, who is an amazing woman who just empowers women. She's wonderful. She mentioned that they were on a platform that UW Parkside provides students once they've graduated for jobs. And at first I wasn't even going to apply because they were looking for somebody in the marketing or design or English major to be a communications coordinator. So, but she was like, you know, I think you'd be really good for this. I think you should reach out. So I did. And I'm so thankful that I did. And that is how I found the job in the first place.
So what are your primary responsibilities there?
Like Kaylin, it's wear many hats. I would say about 75% of my job is behind my desk. So I'm doing things like communicating to members and donors, collecting that information, sending out thank yous. I'll do very light grant writing at this moment. I've been working with NAN on an education training series this year, so we put that together, so coordinating that. A lot of the communications on the social media, through our constant contact constituency, and then 25% of my job, I would say, I'm going outside, I'm taking out invasive species, I'm planting native plants in the parks, or maybe I'm designing a sign for a park or installing a sign at a park. So there's so many fun things to be able to do.
Wow.
And other duties as assigned.
Yeah, right. Yeah. As if all that wasn't enough. Nan, what's your recollection of your initial encounter with Laura, and why you thought, I mean, not that it was entirely up to you, but your thoughts on why it would be a good fit?
Laura's very personable. She's very social. She has a great way with people. And certainly, her degree from Parkside is a good fit with what we do at Root Pike Wynn. Anytime you start at any place, whether it's Hawthorne Hollow or River Bend or, anywhere, there's always a learning curve because everyone has a different path to the same goal. And so, sometimes you think, okay, she's going to be the communications coordinator, and she's going to do this, and she's going to do that. So your role, just as mine has over the years, expands quite a bit. But that's how it always is. So if you're thinking about getting into the environmental field, just know that you will have something that's always interesting to do. It changes with the seasons, and you'll never be bored, ever.
For sure. So what led you to make the choice that you did in terms of what you studied at Parkside?
Yeah. It just, like Keelan said, as a child, of course, camping, being outside is wonderful. And then when I was out of high school, I kind of just continued on the path that I was on. I was doing hair and makeup in Chicago, but I have always had this kind of something that was pulling at me, just something wasn't feeling fulfilling. And I love those things that make your jaw drop and you go, wow, when you learn them, like those mind-blowing things. And it happens to be science stuff that really does that. When you learn about how a life works, how plants work, those types of things are just incredible to learn. So I just had this need that I needed to find a way to satiate that need. So I kind of moved from one salon to a more eco-friendly salon. And then I was dabbling in learning more about the environment, went to the library, not sure what I was looking for, and a book was facing me called Animal Factory, which was about how animal agriculture affects the environment. And it was quite thick. It had a lot of legal cases in it, but it was an incredible read. Finding that link and that connection really solidified a path forward. So I moved to a vegan, eco-friendly salon and went, I'm not really into the hair stuff as much. I'm into the learning about the environment stuff. So it was very scary in my mid-20s to leave my home, leave where I had created a life and move back in with my parents, who I'm so thankful and humbled by that they accepted me back and are able to have me, to be able to go back to school and satiate that need of learning about how life works. And during that time, I was able to meet a lot of wonderful professors. And Laura Schultz, the same woman who sent this job application to me, asked me to be on the executive committee at the local Sierra Club group. So I started there and moved my way up. And for a while, I was co-chairing with the other chair. And actually, Laura is now the chair, so that's very exciting. And I've recently stepped down from that position so that I could focus on the job at Root Pike Wynn. And here I am.
Excellent. What a great story. So when someone asks you, what do you do? Well, I'm the communications director at Root Pike Wynn. What is your answer to their next question, which is likely to be, so what is Root Pike Wynn? And why does it matter? Why does their work matter? What is How do you answer that very basic question for people?
That's a really good question. Even with going to school for environmental studies, I don't think when I left that I understood the concept of a watershed until I really started doing that particular research. So a watershed is a geographical location where all the water that falls onto it or flows under it exits that location to the same point. So no matter where you are, if you're at home, you're at your school, you're hanging out with your friends, you're on a watershed. Without clean water, and going further environmentally, without clean air, without an ecosystem that has its checks and balances, that is functioning, I don't know if we have anything. We don't have, without pollinators to pollinate our food, we don't have life. So when it comes to what we do, is we're looking for projects that function, create functional habitats, create functional wetlands, create functional streams and rivers. Not only just for our pollinators, but that also is for our safety and security. So it's everything from something very small to something very large is kind of how we function.
Very good. How large a staff is it at Root Pike Wynn?
We are a small and strong staff.
Right. There you go.
Yeah, there's five of us. Yeah. And then we have a good cadre of volunteers, mm-hmm. That we reach out to and people that we contract with for outside projects. So if you're interested in the environment, please reach out to us. We would absolutely love to work with you.
You know what I was thinking just moments ago when Kaylin was talking about the sisters that started Hawthorne Hollow? In this local region, there's a very strong history of women actually spearheading the environmental ethos, essentially. So when you think about River Bend, that was definitely woman-headed way back in the beginning. When you think about Root Pike Wynn, that started with Allison Werner. When you think about Ceno Conservancy, that started out with a woman, Elvira Ceno, who put her land into trust to do that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing, isn't it?
I had not stopped to think about that. That's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And you were saying that one of your professors at Parkside, I forget how you phrased it, but one of the things, I think it was Professor Schultz, mm-hmm. that one of the things that she went out of her way to try to do was give women a sense of empowerment and that there was a place for you in the sciences, because I suppose still to this very day, there maybe is this underlying assumption that's made that that's mostly man's work. I don't know where in the world that comes from, and what Nana was just describing just flies in the face of that. But did that make a difference for you?
I don't know. I think it's really cool to see women empowering women to do great things. But I think it's really cool that more females are taking these jobs, because we are strong and we can get out there and we can remove lots of big trees and branches, and we've shown that we can, you know.
Right. Well, and as Nan said, they are the movers and shakers. So what is Root Pike Wynn really busy with at the moment?
Our annual report is going out today. It's very exciting. So if you are a member or donor, you'll be getting one of those. If you would like one, please reach out to us. And we are, it is dying down now that, like Kaylin said, it's getting colder, so we'll be doing more planning stuff coming up, but we still have some really fun classes coming up too. We have a winter salting done right, how chlorides affect the rivers, lakes, and streams, and how you can stay safe on the ice. So that's coming up in January, as well as if we get snow, a snow seeding class, so that would be really fun to attend. And then we're going to do a spring ephemerals, rain garden classes, native landscaping, purpose-driven landscaping. These are all coming up in the beginning of the year, so definitely check our website out and join us, please.
I just realized in all these conversations I've had with Nan over these many years, I have no idea where Root Pike Wynn is headquartered. Do you have physical offices?
Yeah, it's a beautiful office. It's newer to Root Pike Wynn, but they have moved into the old Chancellor's House on the UW Parkside cross country course. So we are very close to Hawthorne Hollow. So you can come check out both at once.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. Laura Busker, who is Director of Communications,
mm-hmm.
at Root Pike Wynn. And also Kaylin Daum, who is a naturalist with Hawthorne Hollow. It's been great to meet both of you today and to hear your stories of what has led you to become movers and shakers in the environmental community here in southeastern Wisconsin. Nan, any closing thoughts?
I'm grateful that my colleagues were able to make it today. I'd like to give a shout out to Chelsea Snowden-Smith, who's another hometown kid made good in the environmental world. Unfortunately, she was unable to join us today because she was really under the weather, but maybe some other time.
I hope so. Very good. Well, thanks for cooking up this lovely idea. It's been a fun conversation. I know you want to finish out with a few announcements that you have about events coming up.
I do have a few announcements, kind of exciting ones. So as Kaylin alluded to, Hawthorne Hollow is having its Wine Under the Stars event on December 22nd from 7 until 9 p.m. The fee is $12. Bring your own beverage, and what will happen is that you'll enjoy it under the stars while you relax in a zero-gravity chair as you're guided through the night sky. Just go to the Hawthorne Hollow website to register. Cloud cover is the determining factor here. So just watch the website and they'll be able to tell you whether or not the event is being held. Pringle Nature Center is having a winter solstice night hike on December 18th. It starts at various times, so they're staggered. Just go to the website and it'll tell you what times you can pick from and how to register. The fee is $6 for non-members. It's free if you're a member or a volunteer. You'll enjoy cultural and natural history of the winter solstice and a lovely hike through the woods under the stars. Riverbend Nature Center is having its winter break camp. So if you're looking for something for your kids to do during winter break, you don't have to look any further. Children from 7 years old to 12 years old will spend time around a campfire, explore River Bend, track wildlife. Registration is required, of course, and space is limited. So it runs from December 27th to the 31st from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can pay on a daily basis or pay for the entire thing. Again, just go to the website and you can register. And last but certainly not least, the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center is having its solstice celebration on December 21st from 6 until 7:30 p.m. So you'll enjoy a guided luminary hike. There will be live festive music, and you'll also get to learn about Wisconsin's native birds that stick around here in the winter. The gift shop will be open. That's reason enough to go to the solstice celebration. It's a free event, but there is a suggested donation of $5 per person.
Very good. All right. Well, it's nice to know about all these exciting things going on. And Nan Calvert, I want to thank you for all of the interesting programs that you have helped make possible over the course of this calendar year.
You're welcome.
And I hope that we can continue to have this fun through 2022.
Me too. I think we will.
All right. Nan Calvert joining us and helping to put together these wonderful programs once a month here on WGTD's Morning Show. And I'm Gregory Berg. On the morning show for our final new program of 2021. It's an exciting conversation that features Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, and joining him two very important people in healthcare here in southeastern Wisconsin, Dr. Vicki Coyle, who is dean for the School of Health here at Gateway, and joined by Laura Just, who is president for Advocate Aurora, Southeast Wisconsin. And we talk about the state of affairs of healthcare here in southeastern Wisconsin. It's a wide-ranging and fascinating conversation we recorded earlier this morning. It will air tomorrow. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, WGTD.